Hello, this is Reverend Wynn Henderson, and the program is called Share Your Mission. It's my podcast, and I have the opportunity of having a very special guest on my program today, Dr. Bernie Siegel, and he's being joined by his grandson, Charlie Siegel. It's nice to have you on the program today, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Their new book is called When You Realize How Perfect Everything Is. And if you remember back 20 years ago, I had Bernie on my show, and we actually produced a book off of that interview. And he was at the time at the peak, I think, of his career and well-known everywhere. And I will tell you that it was really, really great to have him on the show. So he was a New York Times bestselling author. And so we're going to get his grandson, Charlie, on with him today. And we're going to see what they have to say about the new book, When You Realize How Perfect Everything Is. Bernie's, one of his biggest books was Love, Medicine, and Miracles. And he did the exceptional cancer patient protocol. He's a retired pediatric general surgeon and has been called a leading teacher of the mind-body connection. And Charlie is his grandson. And he's a spiritual fiction author and poet, as well as fine art nature photographer. His lifelong study of the martial arts is another aspect of his spiritual practice. Bernie and Charlie, it's nice to have you here today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure
to
share the experience.
Okay, so I have read your book, very good book, and has a lot of good poems in it. I think you alternate back and forth, and a lot of photographs. Charlie, would I be correct in assuming that you took all of the photographs?
Yeah, it's all my nature photography and landscape and wildlife illustrates our book, and one of my photographs is on the cover, too. It's a hawk soaring through a sunset sky over mountains. I took that on top of Mount Monadnock in New Hampshire. And we wanted to bring my photography into it to help to illustrate the healing messages in there and also the connection that we all have with nature and the patterns in it and how it can teach us.
Well, Charlie, how did someone get to find out about your photography and perhaps even buy some of it?
So my photography company is called Photography by SC. And I have a few different spots online. I'm on Facebook or Instagram at Nature Photo by SC. And it's S like Sensei. It's from my martial arts training, C like Charlie. Also on a site called Picfair, Nature Photo by SC.picfair.com. And I do custom pieces too if people want to message me. And I've done a lot of photography from here in the northeastern U.S. where I live, and then I got to train a couple times in Iceland for photography, and I was in Japan last summer, so our book has photography from all three locations in it.
You gave a couple of letters, and it was hard for me to hear. What were those letters?
SC, so like S like Sam, C like Charlie.
Oh, SC, okay. Well, Bernie, I went back and reviewed your interview from almost 20 years ago, and you were in one of my books, Share Your Mission 3, Volume 3, Personal Thoughts of 12 Great Americans with Mission-Driven Lives. Some of the other people in that book were Harvey McKay, a business person, Swim with Sharks, I think is what his book was then. Dr. Larry Bates, a Christian economist, Dr. Ellen Krugman, and she was a relationships expert, Jack Canfield, which was one of the editors of Chicken Soup for the Soul, Larry King, who's the best known interview host that we have in this country, and Peter Lowe, who did success seminars for a number of years. We were in really good company, and they were in company with you too. So I want to go back and ask you some questions, pull from your time on that show. You had a thing going called Exceptional Cancer Patients.
Right.
Would you briefly tell us what that was and what you found as a result of that?
Well, I went to a workshop by Dr. Carl Simonton many years ago that I thought was for doctors, because he had written the book Getting Well Again, Help Cancer Patients. I was the only doctor in the auditorium. It was filled with patients, which showed me how sick medicine is when he's trying to help you help your patients and no doctor shows up. They're all treating a disease, not people. But my patients were sitting around me, and one young woman said to me, "You're a nice guy. I feel better when I'm in the office with you, but I can't take you home with me. So I need to know how to live between office visits." And that's what changed my life and career. I realized if I help people to live, I would have done something for them. Even if I didn't cure their disease, I helped them to live. And then I learned again, you send out 100 letters saying you want to live a longer, better life, come to a meeting. Didn't say you couldn't bring your friends and relatives. So I expected a couple of hundred people to show up. And 12 women appeared, and they became my teachers. I learned how many people are afraid to fail, don't want to participate, don't want to read a book, don't want to draw a picture for you. It was just unbelievable to me that they didn't have that desire to live. But the ones who did, my wife labeled them exceptional. And I said, let's call it that, exceptional cancer patients. And they taught me about survival behavior. Okay. Ultimately, now we're like 40, 50 years later. I'm not in all the magazines with the headline above me, controversial doctor. And it was ridiculous, all the arguments I got into, and therefore on all the talk shows where doctors could fight with me and argue with me that it's ridiculous. What difference does it make how somebody feels? What difference is what's going on in our life? They had nothing to do with the people. And I may add, I got more support from psychiatrists ultimately. One set out to show I was crazy. That what difference could it make how people going to a group or feelings? And so he set up a group to show that it made no difference. And at the end of the year, the people in the group he set up had a better survival rate than the control group. So it changed his attitude. And then things began to happen, and science steps in when you start studying genes and what they do to you. And so, you know, all the things that years ago were considered crazy, it doesn't make sense, it's not scientific, are scientific now. And I'm not controversial. And science is supporting how emotions and feelings affect your body and the outcome. And, you know, I might say we share. See, in the pain I was having years ago as a physician, I wrote poems and kept a journal. I have found many of them, and I love them, rereading them from, you know, 20 and 30 years ago. Because as a physician, you're not trained to deal with people and feelings. So I was writing to get it out of my system. And, I mean, how this book, you might say, evolved too. I was writing something now called No Endings, Only Beginnings, about life and death and spirituality and a whole host of things. And I was sharing with Charlie and realized he's written poems. I've written poems. We shared them. We realized how alike the poetry is and the feelings about life. So it turned out becoming this book when you realize how perfect everything is, with Charlie's photographs and my poems and his poems. And I may add, he's into photography. I was into art as a way of healing myself, painting portraits. And, you know, I just thought there were so many similarities between the two of us. And just while I mentioned the art, I painted portraits of everybody in the family and pets too, because when I came home from the hospital, it healed me in a few hours. And one day I came home and all the pets were running away from the house with the children. And I realized they were doing that because they didn't want me to say, hey, come over here. You sit down and pose. I'll paint you a portrait. They were tired of posing. I remember laughing that day. So I said to them all, come on in. I'll put up a mirror and I'll paint myself. And what I painted, if you came into our house, you wouldn't know it's me. It's me in the surgical outfit, a cap, a mask, and a gown on. And that was my problem back in those days, what I was covering up and hiding and burying inside of me and what it was doing to me. So I learned to uncover, deal with my feelings, and help my patients too. And they taught me that when you change your life, you change the outcome too of the illness. So that became, you know, a part of my life, a part of my writing. And what shocked me was how wise Charlie was at his age. Because when I started sharing some things with him and talking to him, it was like, yeah, he's written poems. Oh, let me send you my poems, and I'll send you my poems. And you'd be amazed at how many poems were the same, in a sense, same topic, same feelings, you know, about life. So it just sort of came together into this book. And I have to add one more thought. Dangerous to ask me a question because I never stopped talking. But on the cover, I said to Charlie, it says, when you realize how perfect everything is, then you see a bird soaring through the sky, sort of a rainbow set of colors, and a conversation about life between grandfather and grandson, and then our names. So I said to Charlie, why aren't there two birds if it's the two of us? And I loved his answer, because he said, no, that's about the reader. They're going to sail through, fly through. It's their, you might say, course and path in life. And let the poetry help guide them to realizing how perfect everything is. And I love that thought. So anybody who reads it, think of yourself as that bird and where your destination is.
One of the things that I remember from back two decades ago was that you told your staff and other people, don't call me Dr. Siegel, call me Bernie. That made a big impression with me. And I, at the time, wondered why more doctors didn't have that feeling of not hyperinflating their credentials, but wanted to come across as a real human being.
Well, because they're not taking care of people. When I say I learned from Jung. Dreams and drawings tell you what's going on inside the body as well as what's going on in a person's life. So when I say to hundreds of medical students, draw yourself working as a doctor, you would be, the first time I couldn't believe it. From one medical school class down south, these were the pictures. One had no human being in it. Remember, the instructions are draw yourself working as a doctor. It was all the equipment and computers. 98% were sitting behind a desk with a diploma on the wall behind them. No human being other than the student as a doctor. One picture showed the student as a doctor kneeling next to a wheelchair, handing the lady in the chair a tissue with his arm around her shoulder. And I said, that's being a doctor. You're touching the patient. You're providing her with what she needs, a tissue. It's not about the disease. And again, medical schools are still behind in humanizing what I call medical education. Instead of giving everybody medical information, they need to be truly educated about caring for people, not just treating a disease. And one more quote, because Jung said this over 100 years ago, the diagnosis helps the doctor, but it doesn't help the patient. But there, the key thing is the story. And it alone shows human background and human suffering. And only at that point can the doctor's therapy begin to operate. So you go to the doctor and you get a pill. Did they say what's going on in your life? No. You get a pill.
Bernie, back when I started practicing medicine in the early 70s, we were taught to examine our patients by physically touching them, putting the stethoscope on their chest, etc. Nowadays, I got a doctor who wants to do a video call and take a picture of me, and that's how they examine their patients.
Yeah.
And it's so different and so impersonal now that
right.
I think we really have been going in the wrong way for a while.
Yep. I always said that every student should be put in the hospital for a week if they want to be a doctor. Just put in the hospital as a patient for a week and lie there and realize what it's like, what the experience is like, rather than the diagnosis. Because I get innumerable letters, and people, physicians often write books when they or their loved ones get life-threatening illnesses. And they say, thank me, you're a big help. And this is one doctor who really, in his book, he said, I want to apologize to Dr. Siegel for what I thought of him. Now that my wife is sick, he's a big help. Because now he's treating an experience, not just a diagnosis.
Right.
And
you
said, you know, I know my
okay.
grandson is here, that's what surprised me about Charlie. Matter of fact, he would have been a good doctor. Because when I was asking him for help with another book called No Endings, Only Beginnings, that just came out, I was amazed at how spiritual he was, the poetry he wrote, because I had written some and wanted to share things with him. And so this book about how perfect everything is evolved out of those phone conversations and the sharing of experience. Because he's way ahead of his time in the sense of at his age, how sensitive and caring he is.
Well, that's great because he's got a number of years ahead of him and he can do some really great things in those years. Bernie, you said back then that you had an experience with God and God told you that you were a satellite dish with a remote control and TV screen. He told you, he gave you a mind to select what channel you were going to watch.
Right.
So what did you take away from that message?
Well, it's about faith and who your Lord is. See, if your Lord is impressing people, accumulating money, you know, being on a stage, having a reputation, rather than helping the world, then you're going to have a difficult time and a crazy life. But what I was saying to God is that it's, you know, I need direction, that I don't always understand God's parables, you know, what's the story, what I'm to get out of it. Reading the Bible or whatever, and God's journey is that simple. You know, it's the satellite dish, the remote control, and the television screen. I said, what are you talking about? He said, look, you have a satellite dish. You have options of all the voices and programs that are out there. So I gave you a mind. You select one. And then, like the television screen, you display it. with your body. So who is your Lord? Which channel are you tuning into? Which voice are you listening to? And that impressed me. I realized that I had choices and I could help myself, but also choose which kind of life I've lived. And I have literally always, since those days, let my Lord do the speaking. I provide the speaking physically, but my Lord provides the script, and I follow what I'm told to say.
Well, Bernie, these days, you know, I've been doing addiction work for 30 years, and various addictions that are popular have changed over that 30-year period. And I believe that the most common addiction these days is an addiction to your screens, your telephone screens, your video gaming screens, your screens on your computer, your phone and everything. And there are more people that are addicted to that than any other single thing. And I get the feeling that this is not good for the people, for the country, for the world, because there's so many things bad that happen with people who are glued to those screens. And Charlie, what do you think about that?
Yeah, we were talking about my photography, and we have a chapter in our book, When You Realize How Perfect Everything Is. The fourth chapter is called Nature, Our Teacher. And you know, we come from nature. We're a part of all of that. I through my mom's side of the family, we have a lot of Native American friends, and I've grown up with a lot of their culture and their teachings on the oneness of all of nature, and that includes us. So there's some great things that can come from the internet and from ways that we can connect with each other and share wisdom around the world. But yeah, there's a lot of negatives when it gets overused, just like a lot of things, that too much of a good thing becomes a bad thing. So that being outside or in some way connecting with the, I call it the healing beauty of nature's touch, is really important for everybody and makes a difference in your lives. And I talk about that like in a spiritual way, in a metaphoric way, but I read some amazing studies recently too, that they said an hour and a half out in nature reduces the blood flow to the section of your brain that's responsible for negative thinking. So it changes the whole way you think and the way you behave when you get to be outside and kind of get away from the clutter of life or the distraction and busyness of the screens, like you were saying. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
It's interesting how, again, nature improves your body. See, those are things I was criticized for decades ago. How can emotions make any difference? Why are you blaming your patients, asking them what's going on in their life? But it changes you, what you do, what you look at. Because, again, when you're saying people are looking at everything, one of the most important symbols in our life is the still pond. The ugly duckling realizes he's a swan. Doesn't spend his life cursing his mother who threw him out of the house for not fitting in. When he's on a still pond with swans, he realizes he's a swan. Joseph Campbell said, a tiger dies giving birth and the goats bring up the baby that's lying there. It grows up thinking it's a goat because it has nothing to show it. It isn't. And when another tiger runs by, says, stupid, come with me, you're not a goat. And where does he take him? To a still pond. Look, you're a tiger, you're not a goat. And I think if we all quieted our minds, we'd see the truth. Literally, a friend of mine who's an animal intuitive, Amelia Kincaid, taught me how to speak to animals in my mind. And it's real and it works. I'm not going to get into examples, but I can tell you can read her book straight from the horse's mouth. But what was she always saying to me? Bernie, stop yelling when you lose your pet. Quiet your mind. Get into the animal's mind. You'll know where it is. You can talk to it. Tell it to come home. And wow. And I will, just to reaffirm, from California and Africa, she has told me where to find the lost pet in in Connecticut. And that blew my mind and made me a real believer. Because when she can tell me what my house looks like and where this creature is, I can't deny it. So what's the message to everybody out there? Quiet your mind. And I'd say in many ways why Charlie and I wrote poetry. I was in pain, all this stuff I was storing inside of me that I couldn't cure and fix. And I loved people. And I did a lot of children's surgery. And I wondered, what the hell's wrong with God that he does this to children? So we were finding our way, trying to find our stillness by bringing forth the pain inside us and the questions inside us and turning them into poems and helping ourselves to heal.
I grew up with a really spiritual background. My mom started a store in a class center called Wisdom of the Ages in Connecticut when I was 3. So I've grown up being around that, and now I help her run it. And it's, you know, teaching people meditation and helping people to connect with themselves and to work through things going on in their lives to be the best that they can be. And having that be my everyday world has really made me. And the writing and the photography that I do is another facet of that same kind of practice. So when I was showing my poetry to Grandpa Bernie and he was showing me his, it's really neat to me what a kinship we've found in our work that way. Things written years apart and in different backgrounds, we share on a lot of them. We can read a couple of our pieces if you want during the show.
Charlie, I think our next book should be The Wisdom of the Ages.
It is a great title.
You know, mm-hmm. And share again all the things that we learn that have been known for the ages, but we don't get taught. I mean, I have to say, Charlie and I had parents who taught us about surviving and life, you know, of listening to our hearts, using difficulties to redirect us, not feel like a failure. You know, and so we were able to keep going and be in touch with our feelings and even write about them. Or he takes photographs, I paint portraits. I mean, just all of this is healing. And we've learned through practical experience about it. And then we wrote about it and can share it with other people so it can help them to heal.
Bernie, I'd like to go back in your life to when you were a child. And over the years, I've done hundreds of interviews on people with near-death experiences. Mm. And I understand you had one when you were a child.
Yeah, four.
And I want to ask you, what did you take away from that near-death experience of a spiritual nature?
Well, my whole life should have been a movie. Because let me just start with before I was 4, my mother had hyperthyroidism, a very aggressive case, was told by doctors, don't become pregnant, it could kill you with the stress on your body. And she became pregnant. She had no strength in her body, so she couldn't deliver me when she went into labor, and she couldn't survive a cesarean section, so they dragged out, to quote my mother, and handed her a purple melon after several weeks of labor. She took it home, covered it with blankets, and put it in a carriage and hid it behind the house so nobody would see me and get upset. I said to her, then how the hell did I survive? If nobody's touching me, you know, kids will get infections, die when they were in nurseries and nobody was handling them. And then I learned what saved my life. Oh, my mother took you, poured oil all over you, and pushed everything back where it belonged 4 or 5 times a day. So I started my life as the most loved kid in the world, as far as I was concerned. I was getting massaged by loving hands all day long. And that has been a part of my life. And when I got a massage for the first time in my life with a shaved head, I went into a trance and became the infant again, because a woman was doing it for the first time. And they thought I had a heart attack or a stroke, to quote her husband, because they couldn't talk to me or communicate with me. And when I came out of the trance, I explained to them what happened. But boy, were they scared of where I was. But again, my parents, through their own troubles, loved me. And so I felt that love and grew up with it and just was free, you know, to be myself and live my life and to do what made me happy. Was when I had a decision, they didn't make it for me. They told me to do what made me happy. So I was always getting positive feedback from them. And at age 4, I was home with ear infections, and I had carpenters working in the house who had the nails in their mouth before all the modern equipment, and they would take the nails out and bang them in, you know, and pull another one out. So I took my toy telephone apart. I should have sued the company for making one a kid could take apart, and I put all the pieces in my mouth from the dial, and then I aspirated them and couldn't breathe. And every time I say that, I feel the pain. It was the most painful experience I've ever had in my life. Every muscle is sucking and nothing, no air. And then I felt total freedom, no pain, no problem. And I realized it's not that you are breathing, you're not in your body anymore. And for a 4-year-old, boy, was that a wonderful thing. The only way you can describe it is like your spirit, your soul, consciousness is floating up around the room. And I looked down, and again, most important message. The kid on the bed was dying. I never said I was dying. I realized I'm not that kid. I'm the consciousness that has left the body. What's on the bed is just a body. That isn't me. And I, as most children that age who have the experience do, they say, okay, I prefer being dead. I'm sorry, my parents will find me dead on the bed and they'll be upset, but this is really better than being alive. And then the boy on the bed or the kid on the bed vomited. At least that's what I thought it was years ago. And the pieces came out and he could breathe. I know today I wasn't supposed to die. God had a schedule for me. So my angel did a Heimlich maneuver on me, and all the stuff came flying out. And I started breathing and got sucked back into the body. It's like a vacuum cleaner. I mean, I never forget that. It was like, phew. And I yelled out, who did that? Those were the first words out of my mouth when I didn't die. Who did that? Because I had chosen death, and who the hell is interfering? And then I have to say, as a 4-year-old, I thought, oh, there must be a God, and God makes the schedule, not you. So stop complaining and go ahead, you know, back to life again. And then my mother came into the room, and she was not in the mood for any wonderful experience I had. You know, when you see your kid is almost choked to death, vomit all over the place, it wasn't, hey, Ma, sit down. Let me tell you what a wonderful thing happened. so there I was. But I'm sure it had a profound effect on me for the rest of my life, just having that experience and feeling there's nothing to be afraid of. Yeah.
Let's go on then. And you said we are killing each other based on different religions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there have been more people killed over religious differences than all the wars that I know of. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, it's all our differences. Some of the things I say to people now is, I have a photograph of one of us and you can't tell who it is. What's it a picture of? And in the room, we have a black man, a Chinese man, an Indian with red skin, darker skin, and me. And I say, I got a picture of one of us, and you don't know who it is. What's it a picture of? The right answer is our hearts. We're all the same color inside. Someday, maybe, we'll realize we're one family sharing a home known as planet Earth. And if we begin to realize we're the same, because again, all my questions to God, why'd you make so many kinds of people? Well, you have to know who they are. Otherwise, you wouldn't know who you're feeding for dinner if everybody was the same. So the differences are for identification, not for, you know, conflict and war. But it's just so sad how people turn God into a problem. You know, that God could, I mean, I know ministers have said, yes, God can give you cancer to get you to come back to church. That troubles me that they preach that to people and blame the people. Everybody's going to die someday. You know, it isn't, what did I do wrong? But when you have faith, yes, you don't die when you're supposed to. I know patients who have gone home from our office saying, all right, I realize everybody's saying there isn't much more they can do for me, so I'm just going to go home and, you know, enjoy my last few months. Come back to the office. One of my partners, who was a former minister, yelled out, Bernie, come in here. Her cancer's gone. This is a lady with a big pancreatic tumor you could feel in her belly. And I said, tell them what you did. She said, ah, you know. I know, but tell them. I left my troubles to God. And that serenity and peace, her cancer disappeared. And I could tell you endless stories. That, you see, again, a doctor says, oh, you had a spontaneous remission. You're so lucky. It's not spontaneous. As Solzhenitsyn said in his book, Cancer Ward, you had a case of self-induced healing. And I say that to everybody. And what Charlie and I are trying to write about, it's the rainbow-colored butterfly. You fight your way out of the cocoon. You spread your wings. The rainbow is everything in order and harmony. And you give birth to that new self. And then you realize how perfect everything is.
This next thing that you said, I think, is one of the most important things that we'll talk about today. You said, when you forgive the unforgivable, then you are free. Would you expound on that?
Well, I think the whole thing was, when you forgive the unforgivable and love the unlovable, you're free. Well, I mean, it's easier to make it practical. And some of the good things about religion. Today I was reading in the Jewish religion that if you loan money to people, you don't charge them interest. You just give them, you know, the loan or the gift of it. And I had loaned somebody quite a few thousand dollars who promised he'd pay me back in 45 days. 2 years later, I haven't had a penny from the man, and I sent him a copy of that. Not to get him upset, but I'm not going to spend my life chasing after him to get money back, because then he's taking control of my life and introducing more unhappiness into it. When I wish him well, and that was something I learned from my father, whose father died of tuberculosis when he was 12, leaving a family with nothing. And my father said, one of the best things that happened to me was my father dying when I was 12 years old, taught me what was important about life. And he spent a lot of his life and money helping other people. And I remember once my mother saying, you know, they may never pay you back. And he said, that's not important. And so I learned that from him. To stop being aggravated about what somebody owes you, but that you're here, you know, to be God's right hand, to be an instrument of God, to help make the world a better place. It's not about measuring things, and if I gave you this, and you ought to give me that, and it's just nuts. We're here to be instruments of love, and when you do that, look what you do for yourself. And again, I can tell you stories from concentration camps where the people helped their other, you know, prisoners, they were more likely to survive. In one book, I forgot who wrote it, but he said when they were coming down the line, you know, who's going to go to the gas chamber, who's going to a work camp, he walked up to the German guard and he said, "Ich liebe dich, I love you." And the guard sent him to the work camp. So love is a powerful weapon. I literally tell people to be a love warrior. I have stopped people from violence in the streets by going up and saying, "I'm sorry for what's happening in your life, but I want you to know I love you."
That's all for today. Tune in to part two soon, and thank you for listening to Freedom from Addiction. You can check out more information on Reverend Wynn Henderson at RevWynnHendersonMD.com. All the information about his podcasts and everything is available there. Check it out, follow all his socials, and listen to part two soon. Take care, everyone.